This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 64. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with the King of Batting, Gary Palmer. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. Well, David, like it or not, I'm back. How was it without me, David?
Well, it was a hard slog, but we made it through somehow, thanks to the help of various people, including Senyo did two shows for us in the last couple of weeks. And yep. the always entertaining J-Rod from Cricket With Balls. So, yep. Yeah, it was good fun. You missed a bit of a party over Christmas and New Year. But but we made it through. How was your time away in India?
It was really good, David. I enjoyed having a bit of relaxation time after a big year. Yeah. But I didn't get as much cricket as I wanted to in my holidays. If you recall me saying, I said I wanted to join a gym, I wanted to go play cricket with the local teams, probably learn a few things from them. Mm. But unfortunately, as it seems, the time I went was their time they had their break. So I tried to look for the closest gym, and the closest gym was about half an hour away by car. So that was it was unfortunate because here in Australia, there's a gym every 10 minutes, but there I had to make do with what I had to do. So it was just left to doing body weight stuff throughout my holidays, which wasn't really sufficient for me because I sort of lost motivation halfway through as well. But in the end, I think that it was a good thing, David. I mean, I got to rest my body a bit. There's a few niggling injuries I had. Now I'm all fresh. Everything's gone. So it was probably a blessing in disguise, I think.
Yeah, and you were saying before we started, you're getting very excited about your first game back. So hopefully that'll carry over and you'll be full of form and energy when you get that game. Almost like it's the first game of the season again.
Yeah, oh, I absolutely can't wait. I've been having dreams about this game during my holidays, which shows you how much I'm going to look forward to it. Plus, this is one of the teams that we sort of have a rivalry with as well. And I've been thinking about all the batsmen, thinking about how I'm going to bowl to them. So hopefully it doesn't go too bad. Hopefully I'll bowl all right. And I've already been to the nets a couple of times since I've landed as well. So I think I should be okay if my mindset is right.
All right, so we won't reveal your plans, but you've already got plans. You know who the players are who you're playing up against, and you've already got plans for them, have you?
Yeah, we played them last time. Now we're playing them at our home ground. I thought they played well in their home ground before, but I was looking at their away records, and they don't play as well away from home, so hopefully we can pull one on them. Because going into the break, we were third, but now I wasn't there for the first two games, and our team lost the two games, and now we're coming fifth, which is out of the top four. So we really need to beat them to get into the top four to make the semis, so it's a pretty important game coming up.
Okay, yeah, so how many games are left in the normal season before the finals begin?
There's about five games, David. This game is a one-dayer, and there's four other two-day games left, so this is sort of crunch time of the season, because really any team can beat any team.
And that's good. That makes it good as well. It's no fun when you're either very bad and you know you're going to lose most games, or you're very good and you know you're going to win most games.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've listened to this show before, you've heard me complaining about how our team over here was way too strong for the division that we were in last year, thanks to the funny way that the league is structured.
Yeah.
And, okay, you know, the start of the season, you're thinking, great, you know, when you're bowling sides out for under 100, or, you know, you're scoring 250 and you know that they've got no chance of getting anywhere near, you know, 200, let alone 250. It's great. Yeah. You know, you're thinking, yeah, this is great. But after a while, it just gets, it does get a little bit boring to be, you know, so much better than everybody else. And I'm sure it's the same as if you've got a very bad team and you lose every week. But it's nice when you're in a league where all the teams are about the same strength, and every week it could go one way or the other, and you're never too sure. It makes it more exciting then, doesn't it, I think?
Yeah, exactly. And you can measure improvement as well, David. I mean, people train so hard, but if you have a really bad team and you lose every game, you can't really tell how you're doing in terms of your training. But if you're playing consistent teams who are sort of the same ability as you, and all of a sudden you start getting more wickets, then you can tell that your training is really worthwhile and it's coming through.
Speaking of training, we've got quite an interesting development on the site now. We've just launched it, and although it won't be relevant to you at the moment, Kev, anyone who's listening in the Northern Hemisphere, we've launched a new section of the site called Countdown to Summer. And the idea of that is to give you a complete guide to everything that you could ever want to know about pre-season practice and pre-season training. So for us over here in the UK and in Europe and in North America, Canada, places like that, it's going to be of great interest, because round about now people start getting interested in the run up to cricket. Indoor nets begin, and people start dusting off their equipment and getting ready to give the ball a bit of a smack around in sports halls around the country. But a lot of times I find anyway, it can be a little bit undirected. You don't quite know exactly what you're doing there. You turn up to nets every week and you have a hit and you have a bowl, but you don't quite know why you're doing it, and there's no real structure to it, which is fine if you're playing in the kind of club where it's, you know, it's just you're meeting up with your mates and you're using it as an excuse to do something before you go out and have a drink on a Friday night. But if you're a little bit more serious and you want to do well, you know you might have ambitions of playing representative level cricket, then pre-season is a really important time, because it's the only time of the whole year where you can get stuff done that you can't do at any other time. You can't do in the depths of winter, and you can't do once the season has begun and you're playing games every week. So pre-season is probably the most critical time in terms of preparation. I mean, obviously, the season itself is the most important time overall. But pre-season is probably the most critical. So we've really pushed the boat out. We've created a whole mini site, which you can find at pitchvision.com/pre-season. And what you'll find on that page is guides to pre-season batting preparation, bowling preparation, fielding, which is often overlooked, fitness and nutrition, which is critical at this time of the year, how to run indoor and outdoor nets, and how to do practice sessions that really make a difference to the team. A place to keep your training logs. We've talked about training logs before, and accountability, video analysis of your technique. If you need that done, then we can do that for you. A list of coaching events and coaching days which are going on around the Northern Hemisphere, and a forum that allows you to, if you're a club and you're looking for players, you can advertise, or if you're a player and you're on the lookout for a new club, say, you know, you want to move up a standard and you're looking for a Premier Division club, then you can head over there and advertise yourself or advertise your club. There's also an exclusive newsletter. So if you want to keep up to date with all the preseason stuff that's going on and sort of keep yourself on track and keep yourself motivated, as you were saying, it's hard to keep yourself motivated sometimes, then a newsletter is a great way to do it, because you'll get that every Friday. It'll come out and have a whole new load of tips in it, exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And a little nudge in the right direction, so everything goes according to plan.
Yeah.
So, not bad. It's a combination of free stuff, loads of free stuff, and some stuff, some premium content as well. So, there's something for everybody there. So, go and have a look. pitchvision.com/pre-season. Get the newsletter, get the free newsletter, have a look around, contribute to the forums, chat with other players who are doing pre-season stuff.
Yeah. Well, this new section looks like it's going to bring a really professional outlook to preseason training. David sort of planned their preseason through that way and probably have a successful season after that.
Well, that's the whole idea, Kevin. You know, you've got the whole idea of a good preseason is so you have a good season.
Yeah.
You've got a choice, really. You can have a look at this. You can do some planning and get things done as close as possible to the optimum. Or you can just sort of have a hit on a Tuesday night or whenever it is that you have your club nets and hope that somehow that's going to get you better. I'm not sure whether it will. Especially the big problem with indoor nets, you know, is that this time of year, you can't work on technique, of course, because you know you only get 5 minutes or 10 minutes in the net, and it's usually there isn't a bowling machine or anything there, and you can't really work on your bowling technique because again you just got to be a you know you've got just got to work as a bowling machine, to the batsman. So it's sometimes it can be very undirected, but this hopefully this can give you the right mindset.
Well, David, we have our king of batting, Gary Palmer, on the line again.
Yeah.
Now, Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps players in the game with CCM Academy, young players in particular. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
Hi, Gary. Welcome back.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Yes, we've got a question from Paul this week. And the problem Paul is having is related to his grip.
Yep.
He's recently changed it. He used to have the more traditional coached grip, where you have the V's of the top and the bottom hand pointing down the inline, pointing down the back of the bat. But he's changed that. So now he's got the bottom hand V pointing down the back of the bat, and the top hand V is halfway between the back of the bat and the edge of the bat.
Yeah.
But what he's noticed since changing that grip, what he's noticed is that his top hand wrist tends to break, and that is causing the handle to bruise his wrist.
Right.
What he wants to know is, should this be happening? If it shouldn't be happening, why is it happening, and how can you stop it happening?
That's an interesting one. You do see a lot of kids with grips where they hold the bat right down the bottom of the handle. If you hold it right down the bottom and there's a lot of bat showing at the top, yes, you know, that bat can dig into your wrist. I think my own son had that problem for a while, and I moved his hands up the handle. And when you come up the handle, it's good to be playing. It's good for sort of stroke makers to hold it at the top anyway. And obviously there's not a bit of bat sticking up, which is going to dig into your wrist. But I've just got a bat in my hand here. I'm trying to pick it up and think this through. And the other thing is, if he turns his top hand V very slightly back towards the middle of the back of the bat, and I'm not saying right the way around, just a little bit more, and when he picks the bat up, try to have a little kink where in his wrist, you know, between the forearm and the back of the hand. So your forearm's near your stomach, and the bat's now starting to go over off stump. Because if the bat is totally in line with the forearm, which means you're probably picking up over middle and leg, I think that's when it's going to dig into your hand. If you've got that slight kink in the wrist, you know, it shouldn't happen.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and CCM Academy, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Welcome to the question section for this week. Now, David, our first question is from Abir Hussain, and it sounds more like he's pleading for an answer, David. He says, I've lost my accuracy and my pace, and I cannot use my non-bowling arm at all. So please help me. What other things do you see as critical to Abir losing his pace and accuracy, David?
Yeah, I think rhythm is a good word, you know, and trying too hard is a good way to describe it. You know, what does that really mean when you're trying too hard and when you've lost rhythm? What does that really mean? Well, for me, it's that you're tensing up a bit. So instead of being relaxed and everything coming naturally, you're tensing up for some reason or another. It might be because, as you say, you really, really want to do well. So your shoulders get tight because you're really, really desperate to do well. And then you end up not having that nice, fluid approach to the wicket and that lovely, smooth action that you have when everything's working properly. So it might be just a matter of sitting down and thinking to yourself, okay, what am I doing when things are going badly? You know, am I undirected? Am I just running up and bowling and hoping that it's going to go well? Or do I have a specific goal? Do I know what my captain needs me to do in this over, in this ball, in this bowling spell? Am I completely confident that I've got the backing of my captain to do what I need to do? Because it's no good thinking I'm a strike bowler if the captain wants you to hold up an end.
Yeah.
So you've got to know what your goal are. You've got to know what your role is. You've also got to, when you're out there in the middle, and at the top of your run, you've got to have your mind clear of everything except for what you're going to be doing that particular ball. So you don't want to be thinking, oh, I hope this goes well. You don't, or even thinking, oh, this is probably going to go badly. You know, that maybe that's even worse. You just want to be completely clear of whatever else apart from where you want to put the ball. You can clear your mind of everything by the technique which we've talked about before. You know, the psychologists call it self-talk. You know, where you can where you can sort of trick yourself into keeping the negatives out and keeping yourself focused on the task. So, you know, and we've talked about that many times before, and there's a link, I'll put a link to the show notes of some things that you can do to help with that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is technique. You know, I mean, I can't think that the technique is going to be changed so much that he suddenly lost the ability to bowl. Maybe it's hard to say without actually seeing him. But what you might want to do is go back to the basics of technique in practice. Don't bowl to a batsman, don't bowl in the nets. Just start by starting from your, you know, basic bowling action position, you know, where you're you know, you don't have a run up or anything. You just stand in the ready position and bowl the ball. But don't even start with a ball. Just start with nothing. Just start by getting the feel back for what it feels like for everything to be in the right position. And then gradually bring back in the run up and bring back in all the other things. If it helps, do some of the drills that you can find on pitchvision.com, or have a look at the drills you can find in Ian Ponce's How to Bowl Faster course, or Andy Caddick's Consistency and Rhythm course, which are both excellent courses for getting your form back. They've got loads of drills in for getting your form back or correcting any technical flaws. And you can do all the drills yourself, or most of them, either do them yourself or with a partner. So have a look at those courses and then gradually build your technique back up from the ground up. You know, it's not as hard as you think to start again. If you've done it before, it's a lot easier. It's like anything. Once you've done something once, it's a lot easier to do it again. So know in your mind that you want to get back to where you were. You're not climbing a new mountain here. You're just sort of in the foothills of somewhere you've already been.
It's interesting you talk about having a positive mindset, David, because when I was in India, I was watching a lot of cricket, and I was watching Srisant's bowl, and they were talking about how he's changed his mindset for bowling. Apparently, when he was playing county cricket in England, he was working with Alan Donald a lot, and one of the main things Alan Donald taught him was about his mindset while bowling. So he taught Srisant to think that whenever he's bowling, he's in control and not the batsman. Even if the batsman hits him for a four, he has five more balls to get him out. And he made Srisant think that every time he bowls, he's the king, and that the batsman's the one who should be scared of him. So with things like that, Srisant all of a sudden lost his erratic ways, and he was bowling really well in the one-day series. So what you say could be right, David. It should, after all, be the mindset.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, with someone like Srisant, you know, he's got a good bowling action. His technique is good anyway. So you don't really have to worry about that side of things at all. Now, we don't know what this chap's technique is like. He might have an absolutely shocking bowling action. Well, you know, if he has, then you probably need to look at technique first. But especially for experienced players who have had success in the past, then in many cases, it's less about technique and more about confidence, the mental side of it. But the two feed into each other, of course. You know, if you feel like you've got a good technique, then you feel like you can rely on it, you're going to be confident. So it's kind of a, you know, self-fueling thing, technique and confidence together. You can't look at them separately. You've got to look at them together in one go, because very rarely you'll find someone with an absolute nailed down perfect technique and zero confidence. It doesn't work that way. Because you get confidence from your technique, you get your technique from your confidence. They build each other up. So look at both. And work on it. Work on it. Don't think it's going to magically come out of nowhere. Practice. Get in the net. Keep practicing until it feels right again. And then you'll be able to do it in the middle again.
David, our next question is from Chris, and he's got a bit of a dilemma as well. He says, a new net facility has opened 4 miles from me, and the club I play for has access to this. It also has a bowling machine, so hopefully this will prove beneficial. Are there any DVDs you could recommend that would help to show club players how to play different shots, defensive and attacking? I was also wondering if there are any others, and perhaps more recent ones, showing how to execute the latest shots, paddles, reverse sweeps, lift over the keeper to a short ball, etc. Also, on a personal level, I badly hurt my active shoulder a while ago, and I've lost the confidence to throw, and I've read that medicine ball workout can help. Do you know of any resources to check out that might give me some idea of exactly what to do in this respect? Thanks. Now, David, I'm pretty sure you have the answer for Chris right here.
The obvious answer, if you're a regular listener to the show, of course, is the Pitch Fitter Academy cricket coaching courses online. They're not DVDs, but they are, especially the batting ones, contain a lot of videos, a lot of content that you can use to coach players on batting techniques. We've got every shot in the book in there. Thanks to Gary Palmer and his excellent videos and courses and coach education stuff. So you can really help players develop pretty much any shot you like. Particularly the focus is on the straight bat shots, because of course they're the shots that are probably the hardest to play, but also once you get them right, they stand you in the best stead because they're the least likely to get you out as well. Anyone can swipe the ball across the line, but it's a lot harder to play a really good on drive off the front and back foot. So, but if you can do the on drive, you'll score more runs than if you're swiping everything over cow corner. So, in terms of that, Pitch Vision Academy is the place to go. And Gary Palmer, the one I recommend is Gary Palmer's Batting Masterclass, because that is all his batting coaching video courses that originated on Pitch Vision Academy, all in one place, all for one price. And the price is a lot cheaper than buying them separately. So that's where I go for that. The second thing he asked was about the more unorthodox shots, reverse sweeps. The sweep shots are all in there. All the different sweep shots are in there. The only ones really that have been deliberately missed out are some of the really crazy ones. So, but they're not there deliberately. So, I'm thinking about things like the switch hit, the Dilshan shot over the wicketkeeper's head.
Yep.
I think that's probably it, because the late cut is in there. So is the clearing the front leg. That's all in there. So it's really only the reverse sweep and the Dilshan shot and the switch hit. And the reason why they're not in there is because why would you want to play them? What circumstance would you be in where that shot is going to be a good idea? It's in club cricket. Why would you? Why would you? I suppose, if you're playing a limited over 2020 type game, something like that, and there's a gap there for the reverse sweep, then I can understand that. But the Dilshan shot, you're risking losing your teeth by playing that shot. just hit it straight back over the bowler's head. That's a better shot and a lot less risky. The reverse sweep is a very risky shot, so it's not in there. But all the other sweeps are. The Dilshan shot's not in there. The switch hit, again, it's such a risky shot. I mean, if you're Kevin Peterson, you can get away with it. But it's one of those things where if you really want to stand yourself in good stead, you need to have an absolutely bang-on technique before you even start thinking about some of those crazy shots. And certainly the club level I play, I don't know anyone with an absolute bang-on technique. Everyone's got a problem. Even at test level, players haven't got bang-on techniques. So, perhaps they've got the natural eye to be able to play some of those crazy shots. So that's why they're not in there. But other than that, I mean, if you're serious about coaching players, then you don't want to be coaching them reverse sweeps and things like that anyway. Not unless they're very, very good. And if they're very, very good, chances are you're a very, very good coach. So you probably know that already. But if you want to coach normal players or even good players, then stick to the stuff that's in Gary Palmer's courses. What was the last part of the question about using a medicine ball to improve throwing power?
Yeah,
that certainly helps. Yeah, use just a quick overview of that. Using a medicine ball is good because it's a relatively light object compared to, say, doing Olympic tight lifting with an Olympic barbell and Olympic weights. So you can throw it quite quickly, which sort of improves your ability to generate force. You can throw it in several different ways. You can slam it down on the ground. You can push it away from you. You can with two hands, or you can push it away from you with one hand. And if you have a wall there, you can get a medicine ball which bounces. So it bounces off the wall, you catch it and throw it again immediately. And that does help. That does help for general ability. The other thing to look at if you've got a throwing problem is throwing technique, of course, because you want to make sure that, you know, the technique matches the power. And of course, throwing a medicine ball makes no difference to your throwing technique of a cricket ball. You ever used a medicine ball, Kevin?
I have in the gym, David. Don't have one of my own at home, so. But it gets kind of hard at gym because you can't do as many exercises like hitting it on the floor as you can at home sometimes. Because sometimes the medicine balls are upstairs and it makes a massive hollow noise.
Oh, so you're not allowed to smash it down on the floor?
Yeah.
See, that's...
So you're limited to the exercises you use.
See, that's a bad design, that, isn't it, of a gym?
Yeah.
That they put the medicine balls on the floor upstairs.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to throw it against the wall?
Yeah, you're allowed. There's a big, strong wall for you to throw it against. So
good. Okay.
It's good in that way.
Well, that's good because a lot of gyms don't have that. So you're quite lucky there. And my gym doesn't have that. I take my own medicine ball in and I find a little bit of wall and throw it against a strong looking piece of wall.
Yeah.
But and no one's complained yet, so I think I'm getting away with it.
Yeah.
But it is really good. It's like if you heard about plyometrics, you know, jumping off boxes and things like that. It's like it's a lot like plyometrics except for your upper body. So it helps with bowling and throwing, the generation of power in bowling and throwing. So it's really good.
Yeah.
It is a really good technique.
Yeah. Just as a thought, David, what kind of weight do you use, and like how do you decide what kind of weight to use in your medicine ball? Do you start really low and then gradually work your way up, or is there a certain target that you start with?
No, you don't. You don't want to have too heavy a medicine ball because you don't want to end up hefting it. You want it to be relatively light.
Yep.
Generally speaking, for most people, you'd want a 3 kilogram ball for throwing sideways, if you like, or rotational throwing, i.e. the stuff that isn't overhead. And a 2 kilogram ball for overhead stuff.
Okay.
Because the overhead stuff is a bit harder on your body, so you have a lighter ball. But if you're a small person, then you probably want a lighter ball. Especially if you're under 18, then you probably haven't finished growing. You might need a lighter ball, and you can go down even as low as 1 kilogram, and that's fine.
Yeah,
there's no problem with that, because the idea is not to, you don't think of it like progressive overload, overload, I should say, like with normal weights. The overload comes from how hard you throw the ball.
Okay. Yeah.
So rather than getting a heavier ball, picking up a heavier ball, use the same ball but just throw it harder against the wall.
Yeah, okay.
You can also increase the number of contacts, i.e. the number of times that you throw the ball, but you don't want to be doing it for 30 throws in one go. You probably want to, at most, I'd say probably 3 sets of 10 for each type of throw.
Yep.
And progress it by throwing the ball harder.
Okay, yeah.
And you can throw the ball harder by changing the way that you throw it. For example, if you're throwing the ball overhead, then you might start like a football throw-in.
Yeah.
Where you keep your feet flat on the ground, both feet flat on the ground. And then the development for that might be for you to add a step into it. So rather than a football throw in, you step into it. So it just gives you a bit more lower body involvement, and therefore you can throw the ball a bit harder. So you can play with the technique as well. And there is a thinking about it that way, you've reminded me of a quite a good book. It's a few years old now, but it's still pretty relevant. And there's quite a good section on medicine ball training. It's called Functional Training for Sports, and it's by Michael Boyle, who we've talked about on this podcast before. And it's a good introduction to strength and conditioning for sport anyway. But it's got a really good section on medicine ball training. Not only has he got sort of his recommendations for the weights of medicine ball you should be using, but he's also got some progressions that you can do to keep it challenging you.
Yeah.
So it's really good. As long as you use it sparingly, you know, you're not using it as your main type of training, because it is power training, and it's highly specific. But you don't want to use it as your main type of training. You want to be strong and flexible and all the rest of it as well. But as an additional type of training for power, then it's excellent. Very, very good. So, yeah, pick up Functional Training for Sports if you want to know more details on that.
You can get more tips and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the My Cricket Coach Show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 22nd of January. If you have any questions or you want to get in touch, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.